You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. When I think millennial, what do you think? Even if you are a millennial, what do you think? You have a picture in your mind, kind of that hipsterish picture there. There's a certain kind of fashion that goes with this. Not all millennials, of course. It really is just a generation defined by when it's going to live most of its life in the 21st century. And the millennials are a diverse group, but they do have a reputation of sorts. And one of those things that the church has been struggling with is, well, this generation that has by and large left the church, how do you bring them back? Do you bring them back by, well, giving them what they want or giving them what you think they want? I think the latter is probably true more often than not. The church has overreacted to the millennial exodus by saying, well, we just got to be whatever they want us to be. And they've not only got the strategy wrong, they've actually miscalculated perhaps what millennials really want the church to be. We're going to be talking about millennials and worship. Gracie Olmsted joins us, associate managing editor at The Federalist, editor of a weekly newsletter for women called Bright, and author of a column titled Why Millennials Long for Liturgy. Gracie, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you for having me back.
The millennial generation usually has a reputation for either being ignorant of or simply rejecting the past, tradition, history, all of those kinds of things. Is that reputation entirely true or deserved?
I don't know if it's entirely deserved, because I do think within the millennial generation, we've seen this nostalgia for the past that's very powerful and often unfortunately focused on aesthetic things, you know, whether that's objects like vinyl records or board games or, you know, perhaps the music of times gone by. But I do think that that sort of nostalgia is speaking to a spiritual hunger that we need to be talking about more and using as a way to pull a lot of millennials back towards faiths they might otherwise reject.
Talk about some of the cases that you came across in looking at this phenomenon of millennials seeking out, at least with respect to faith in the church, something that is older than themselves.
I've had several experiences that started during my college time and have continued on over the past several years, in which friends or acquaintances would kind of make this shift first philosophically or politically, and then after that spiritually, toward more of a traditional high church approach to their faith. And a lot of them were reading books that were really thoughtful and interesting and different perhaps than the version of faith that maybe they encountered as young people. Perhaps I think a lot of them I knew at least were raised in the non-denominational church. And as a result of those readings, kind of reacquainting themselves with people like St. Augustine or C.S. Lewis or G.K. Chesterton, sometimes even people like Solzhenitsyn or Dostoevsky would kind of pull at their heartstrings towards something and perhaps a manner of faith that they had never really encountered before, something that was very ancient, very full of ritual, very, very aesthetic, not something that just was involved in, you know, slides on some sort of projector screen and chairs in a school, but something that would take place more in a cathedral, something with incense, something they felt like they could see and taste and touch, more than they did in their past. And as I've grown older, I've met a lot of young Catholic converts who shared a similar story. During their college time, they encountered just these different philosophical ideas or literary examples that pulled their hearts toward a faith that felt more visceral and tactile, something they could interact with more tangibly.
How is this a part of something else you read about in your piece, and that is a search for meaning on the part of the millennial generation that sometimes sees a lot of the world as meaningless?
I think that goes back, at least in part, to the nostalgia, the craving that we see on a lot of young people to tap into something that enchants their world. We live in this age of widespread nihilism and atheism, secularism, in which people have disassociated the spiritual with the physical, in which the two are separate. And I think for a lot of young people, older faiths like Catholicism or Anglicanism reconnect the two in a way that's very powerful and exciting, because it suggests to them that there's meaning in each and every piece of their lives, down from the food they eat to their daily rituals, their commutes, that everything can be enchanted again. And in a world that's full of, you know, depression and anxiety, I think that sort of idea gives them a lot of hope and a meaning that maybe they've been searching for quite some time.
It's not simply an attraction to the aesthetics of the liturgy. There's also a theological element here that you write about, and that is an attraction to what I think we could call, and you do call, the sacramental. What do you mean by that, generally speaking?
Well, amongst most high church faiths, the sacraments, the bread and wine that we partake of in communion, have a lot more potency to them than is normally understood in a lot of non-denominational evangelical churches. It's something that in the Anglican Church and the Catholic and the Greek Orthodox Church is full of mystery and meaning and is truly enchanted in their minds and in how they approach those sacraments. But the thing that I love about these churches is that this extends beyond just the worship of a day-to-day mass-attending person, and extends into everything they do, every part of their lives. Sacramental theology is something that suggests that every part of your life can be rebirthed and can be born again and resurrected into something beautiful, something beyond just the day-to-day, quotidian, and boring sort of life that we maybe expect to have when we set about our days. And I think that a lot of young people are deeply enchanted by that idea. You know, that's part of the reason why they, you know, tap into things like old vinyl records or classic books or, you know, old Polaroid cameras. They want to see the world through a different lens. And I think the beauty of sacramental theology is it suggests that Christ is that lens. You know, he's the fulfillment of that desire for something reawakened and new and enchanted. At least to some degree, I think they can find that within the church and have started turning there to find some of those answers.
What is it about what the church had been offering? The conventional wisdom in so many denominations was, well, here are these young people that wander away post junior high school or high school, and we have to have a way of either keeping them or bringing them back. And in a lot of churches, they just turned the entire congregation into one big youth group in a lot of ways. What is it about that that millennials not just see through, but ultimately reject?
You know, James K. A. Smith writes about this in his book, You Are What You Love, and I would highly recommend that book for a very interesting approach to keeping young people in the church, but it's much broader than that. It's a whole book about how to grow our love for God through liturgical means. However, there's a chapter on youth group ministries and kind of the conventional approach that a lot of Protestant churches have had, and other churches too, have had toward young people. And what Smith argues is that basically, instead of offering a counterculture or a sacramental theology to young people, we offered them kind of a watered-down, slightly Jesus-filled version of the culture, you know, full of M&Ms and board games and worship bands that sounded exactly like their normal bands that they would listen to on the radio, just with, you know, the words Jesus and redemption and things like that sprinkled in. And what he argues is that what you've done in that situation is you've taken a secular liturgy, a mantra about life and philosophy and faith that the culture has created, that secularism has created, and you've just tweaked the bare minimum amount of details of that liturgy to present it within the church. But unless you're able to go down deeper and actually change the liturgy itself, the message itself that you're sending to young people, you're not going to keep them, because they're going to find a more interesting and colorful version of that liturgy out within the world at large. That liturgy itself belongs to the world. So when we bring it into our churches and expect it to keep teens in the church, we're actually selling them a lie. And I think that that's very true. A lot of people I've talked to said that their version of the church growing up was full of moralistic therapeutic theism, which is a term that kind of just speaks to the idea that God is love, we should all be happy and fulfilled and live these good moral lives, and that that's going to get us to heaven. But that's actually just kind of a toned down version of just the moralism that you can find on the street outside the church. We should be offering something much more enchanted and countercultural within the church itself.
And if someone says, okay, one of these big box churches that had been in the name of keeping and retaining youth, it turned their churches into giant youth groups. If they said, okay, we understand what's going on with the millennials, we'll just burn a little incense on Sunday morning, keep the rest of the service as it is, because we could hardly change it, could we? But we'll burn a little incense. Maybe we'll flash up some, you know, on the big screen, we'll flash up stained glass, or maybe even, heck, maybe a crucifix if we're going to go crazy about it. Why wouldn't that work with millennials?
You know, it might work for some. And actually, that's an interesting tension that I've explored as I've talked to young people who are trying to figure out where they stand on this issue. Some people I know do go to high church branches of the church for the aesthetic appeal. And if they find a lot of those aesthetics at a Protestant church, they would probably go there and be fine with it. And there are more dogged and, I think, philosophically drawn converts to the high church who say, you know, that's not a full conversion. That's not, at least in their minds, what our faith should look like. It needs to be founded on something deeper, on something intellectual, philosophical, and spiritual, not just the habits and mores and kind of the trappings of the high church. However, I do think it's interesting that some churches, like there's some Baptist churches I learned about, and I think a lot of Calvinist Reformed churches that I researched that have brought a lot of liturgical elements into their congregations and that are trying to bring the very best of what they see in the high church into their day-to-day worship. And according to Smith's book, you know, when you're creating these liturgies that are very potent and powerful and preserving them through your day-to-day worship, that is in and of itself a good thing. And so I do think there's going to be a question for a lot of young people out there. Does this feeling I have in my heart, this longing for enchantment, this nostalgia, mean that I need to become a Catholic or a Greek Orthodox or, you know, what have you, whatever the high church is? Or should I bring some of these desires to my local pastor and say, you know, I love my church. Have we thought about incorporating some sort of liturgy or recited scripture or something like that? I'm not sure if there's a perfect answer to a lot of these questions. Some people think there is, and it's, you know, in all of us joining whatever their denomination is. But I would like to see, and I think this is in the piece itself, I would like to see the church draw together more from this impetus, that we would see a larger degree of young people in their churches no matter the denomination, drawing from the treasures of the past, the beauty of the liturgy, more sacramental theology in order to animate their faith.
So it sounds as though, say in my case, I'm a confessional Lutheran, and our tradition is, from the very time of the Reformation, is to retain what we would call small c Catholic worship practice, a very high view of both the word and the sacraments. It sounds like churches like mine may be exactly what these millennials have been looking for, but may pass over in their quest for authenticity.
Most definitely. And, you know, I do know several people who have felt this pull toward enchantment and have gone toward a Lutheran faith, a more deep understanding of the doctrine and the liturgical practices within Lutheranism. I think a lot of the young people who are feeling this pull are mainly looking at churches like, say, some of the ones that, and I don't mean to, you know, belittle or to condemn, but churches that meet, say, in a movie theater or a school and have smoke machines going during the service and, you know, a pastor who wears torn jeans and has a very cool, hip vibe, and the worship pastor who's very hipster and wears the skinny jeans and sounds like he could play, you know, with one of the major recording bands. Like, that sort of worship that feels so secularized in everything but, say, maybe the Bible verses that are read and the words to the songs that are sung, people look at that and say, you know, that's so much just a normal concert that I could go to on a Friday evening. Why even go on Sunday morning? You know, what we want is a church that's so doctrinally deep and full with rituals and practices that are so counter to the culture that young people realize that the church is supposed to be something different, and it can give them answers that they truly cannot find elsewhere. And I don't think that that's specific to one denomination, or at least I don't think it necessarily should be.
Gracie Olmsted is Associate Managing Editor at The Federalist and editor of a weekly newsletter for women called Bright. She's author of a column titled Why Millennials Long for Liturgy. You can read it under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Gracie, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Molly Hemingway of Fox News will be our guest on the other side of the break. Mike Pence was vilified for saying he didn't eat dinner with women other than his wife alone. And now a New York Times poll says a lot of Americans think the same way. We'll talk about it with Molly after this.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
If you've ever wondered why Amazing Grace is the national anthem of funerals, or pondered the state of your eternal soul after you die, the Lutheran Witness has got you covered. Check out the June-July issue of The Lutheran Witness to learn more about death, dying, heaven, and hell. Not a subscriber? Visit cph.org/try-Lutheran-Witness for a special offer, $6.99 for 6 digital or print issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
If you've ever attended an Issues Etc. conference or any number of events that take place across the Synod and have wondered why more people from my congregation aren't here, check out the special seminar package the CLCC is offering for the 500th anniversary. All you need so the pastors of your circuit can organize, promote, and present a seminar that appeals to the members of your congregation, even the youth, is provided free by the CLCC. Just go to theclcc.org and click on the blue box, or check us out on Facebook.
Sacramental, historical, liturgical. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. Eighth Century. The Fourth Century. The best of the Church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.